It's hour two of midday with Trey and BK coming up at 11:45. We may or may not do our audio of the week. That takes a little bit more work than what I've put in this morning, so it's probably not going to happen. We may still play the audio of the Little League kid who just hits dingers. At 11:30, it's tender time. What's one of today's headlines? Dylan Fry filling in for Adam Wagner.
The greatest moment in game show history happened last night.
Okay, looking forward to learning more about that one. In a mere minutes, we're talking Southern Cal football with John Jackson, radio analyst for Trojans football broadcast. I'm Trey Elling. Justin Wells sitting across from me today. Brad Kellner, he's out on vacation all week, so Justin's been nice enough to come down to Austin to sit in on the show for the rest of the week. Very pleased about that. You just heard Dylan's voice, Dylan Fry filling in for Adam Wagner today. Text us. The Specs text line is 337-3776. And the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline for our guests, that is a number that you aren't privy to, but that is the number that John Jackson is on right now. He does join us on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline. He's one of the most prolific wide receivers in Trojans history. When he left USC for the NFL in 1989, he was the school's all-time leading receiver. Currently, among other things, he provides color commentary for USC football radio broadcast, and he joins us now. John, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
Oh, guys, I'm doing great. Doing great. Anxious for football season to get started.
Absolutely. As are we, John, especially with some of these off-the-field stories that we're hearing about right now. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of this year's Trojans football team, I have to ask you, because you set records in your time at USC in the late 80s. Does part of you watch the current version of football and wish you had played in, say, 2018, considering how good you were at the position before passing went to the level that it currently is at now?
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, that's sort of the thing that I'm envious of these players. And, I of course, am involved with the team and talk to these players all the time and always give them a hard time about what I would have been able to do if I played in offenses where they threw the bubble screen. I said, if they were throwing bubble screens back in my day, I would have doubled my numbers. So, it's a running joke. It doesn't get much traction anymore, but, I do wish I played today.
Well, considering that you have a son who's now part of the football team as well, it is your son, John Jackson III. He is the third in a lineage of Jacksons who have actually been a part of this USC football program. How proud were you that your son ultimately decided that he would continue his football career at USC?
Yeah, it's really, special for, not only himself, but our entire family. I mean, I couldn't be prouder of him as a dad, of course, and, going along the whole journey. And, to be honest with you, I would have just happy that, that he's able to continue his, football career just playing at the college level. To have it be USC and, have him be part of the family. My dad coached at USC back, years before I played there. And so, for that to continue is, really a proud dad thing. But now that he's we're committed that way, I've sensed that in the last couple of months, the pressure on dad is a little bit higher. I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse now that he's there, because now the expectations go up, and I'm sure that he's tired of me yelling at him to work out and all that kind of stuff.
That's very, very understandable. Of course, the big question with USC heading into the season is what's happening at the quarterback position. All-American candidate Sam Darnold no longer there. He's the number three pick for the New York Jets. How is that race shaking out right now, and is it possible that we see a true freshman under center for the Trojans, a guy who should be a senior in high school this year?
Yeah, no kidding. That's JT Daniels. I mean, he has been really good. And, coming out of high school, he was so highly rated. It's happened before in USC history where they've had highly rated quarterbacks, where you talk about Carson Palmer, or you talk about even Matt Barkley, or those, guys of that nature that have been in that similar situation. So, USC's sort of been down this road before, and they've learned from it. You have to be patient. But JT has been really good and so far up to the bill. They had a scrimmage, their first open scrimmage this last weekend, and he, along with Amon-Ra St. Brown, was phenomenal. So right now I would say that, it's definitely the other quarterbacks are definitely in the race. It's definitely not over. But I think that he has the inside track right now.
Justin Wells here. Let's talk a little bit about the linebacker situation. It looks like beginning of the season that this was going to be a position of strength for USC when you got Porter Gustin and Cameron Smith and those guys. What is it looking like now after a few early injuries and there's a little bit of discomfort there from the coaching staff and exactly who's going to fill in and who's going to do what? It's a tough opening schedule where you start with Stanford, then you get Texas. What is that linebacking core looking like right now?
Well, you're right. With Cam Smith and Porter Gustin, I mean, the outlook is, you know, really good. Those guys are returning guys, veteran guys, and, you know, definitely leaders. You know, last year, Achenna Nwosu was a key component to the linebacking, you know, to the linebacking core. And he's gone. He's gone to the NFL. So they have one real key position to replace. You know, Porter has come up with a little bit of a, you know, a mild injury that's going to set him back. And the question is, you know, they hope to get him back by the Stanford and hopefully the Texas game. Definitely will be hard to beat them without him playing. So, you know, so that linebacker position, they have three guys with experience. John Houston is also in the mix there. But they need to replace the outlook of what Achenna Nwosu gave them last year. He was phenomenal, maybe the MVP of the defense. And so when you lose a guy like that with that kind of impact, it's going to be a little bit of a problem. They have a lot of young guys competing for it. I mean, there's too many names to even go through to talk about who's trying to take over that last spot. But they do see that as a position of strength. One of the things the Trojans should be very good at this year, they should get great linebacker play.
Another spot was also at defensive back. Last year I had the pleasure of covering the Texas USC at Memorial Coliseum, one of the best venues I've probably ever attended. It was a phenomenal game. You know, not the best ending for Texas fans, but really an incredible experience. One of the best corners I saw in college football last year was a guy named Jack Jones. And it seems like Mr. Jones got in a little trouble in the offseason, and now he's no longer with the team. What does USC have to do to replace him, and what do you think are going to, who do you think are going to be a couple of the guys that hopefully step up in that role?
Yeah, you know, very unfortunate for Jack. I mean, you know, I mean, it's a classic example, and we see it all the time. You know, we watch, you know, Sports Center and all these TV shows of how these kids just continue to get themselves in trouble, and you'd wonder why they wouldn't learn a lesson. And that he had, you know, great, a bright, bright future in front of him. You know, unfortunately, like you said, that's in question now. So, yeah, so the guys that they have coming back Iman Marshall, who was a starter on the opposite side of him, you know, for the better part of the year. I think he missed a couple games due to injury, but he was a starter on the opposite side. The guy that will fill in for him is a guy named Isaiah Langley, who will really probably be, I think, the Trojans' number one cover corner, probably a little bit better in coverage than Iman Marshall is. Marshall is more of a physical type of a cornerback. So they're going to rely heavily on Isaiah Langley. He's going to have a big year because of the depth. Those three guys, you know, including Jack, were the three guys that sort of spearheaded them last year. So now that you're down one, they are really in, you know, seeking a third guy to sort of fill into that role. Greg Johnson is a guy that had very limited time last year, but he could, you know, he's going to have to step in and play big. They have a couple of young cornerbacks that are true freshmen that have really looked good in camp. But as you guys know, in camp and playing in front of, you know, 100,000 people are two different stories. So they're really, in my opinion, that's one of the key positions and the key success for this season. If that position is very thin as far as starters go, you know, because of the loss of Jack, and because of that reason, those guys have to stay healthy. You know, otherwise it could be a, you know, a tough season, and or one of these young guys have to really come on and really play well without having any college experience. And as you guys know, that's always an uphill battle.
Talking to John Jackson, radio analyst for the USC Trojans football broadcast. And John, this defense last year did some nice things. They got to the quarterback pretty well, but overall numbers-wise, they were a pretty average unit. You would expect in a year where you lose so much firepower on the offensive side of the football, Sam Darnold, Ronald Jones, Burnett as well, that the defense needs to take a little bit of a step forward to keep this increased level of play up, like the 11-3 record that they had last year. Is this defense up to the task of actually stepping it up more so than what they were able to do in 2017?
Well, you know, and with that, because there were so many young guys, I mean, we sort of alluded to a lot of them at linebacker and, you know, and defensive back. There's a lot of guys on the defense that have experience. And anytime you guys know you have a defense that, you know, is coming back with a lot of experienced guys, a lot of returning starters, the expectations go up in terms of what kind of defense you're going to be, right? And or what kind of team you're going to be. You know, are you going to be a defensive-minded team that, you know, sort of forces field position and tries to keep the score down and, you know, those types of things? I think early on, this is what this team has to be. They have to be a team that is spearheaded by their defense. But the simple facts of what we talked about, you're going to have a brand new quarterback. You're breaking in a new receiver, no matter how that goes. Your offensive line is pretty experienced returning, but you did lose one of the starters from up there. So I think that from a team perspective, it's going to have to be a defensive-minded team early in the season. And as you guys also know, is that offense is hard to score a lot of points early in the year. You know, you need to get some rhythm going and, you know, get some familiarity going on with the guys that you're playing with. So for that reason, I think they're going to have to lean on this defense. I think that you'll see Clay Helton and his coaching staff sort of coach that way. I don't think that they're going to be, you know, high risk, you know, especially early on. They're going to have to take some chances because teams are obviously going to know that they want to run the ball and, you know, sort of protect the quarterback in the early going. So for that reason, I think they're going to have to take some chances, but I don't think they're going to air it out as much as they did last year with Sam Darnold. Obviously, with a quarterback of Sam's potential or, you know, of capability, you're able to take some more risk and put a little bit more on his plate. I don't think that'll be the case early in the season, but as the season goes on, I think they are still talented enough on offense to really put up some good points, but the first three games are just murderer's row. I mean, who wants to play? I mean, UNLV will be should be an easy game, but who wants to play Stanford and Texas back-to-back weeks? That's a very tough task.
Yep.
Switch over to the offense, and let's. There was a guy that really stood out to me last year in the Texas game, and it was Stephen Carr. I remember covering him at the opening, and him just being such a dynamic athlete. I don't really know that. And that's reason I bring him up is, what do you think is his natural position? Because I know he can play some wide receiver. I know he can be sort of an all-purpose back. It looks like he's going to get some running back, carries and things of that sort. What is USC going to do to utilize probably their best weapon on offense?
Yeah, I think that, you know, you're right. I think that he can change. He's a guy that changes games, just by getting the ball in his hand some way, somehow. I think that last year, he was having a great freshman year until he got hurt and, ended up missing, part of the season, due to injury and happening to go the offseason to recover with a little bit of a back injury. But he seems back and, you know, he's out there and he's participating and he still looks like the same Stephen Carr, from before. So that's the good news. He's dynamic. I mean, he will make his presence at the running back position because he's so versatile in terms of coming out of the backfield and creating mismatches on linebackers. They will either move him out of the backfield, out of motion, or sometimes, like you said, line him up in the slot and let him run routes. He's sort of the guy that is a mismatch for any defense. If you put linebackers in there to try to stop him from running the ball, then of course he can get out and catch it, or vice versa. So there's so many things that he does as a player, and it just makes it a tough matchup for defenses. So I expect a lot from Stephen Carr, this year, even to be better than he was a year ago.
It seems like in looking at this offense and where the experience is in terms of guys returning for 2018, this offense may rely a lot on the offensive line as well. They have four or five returning starters, three seniors on that offensive line as well. Do you think the offensive line will help ease the transition of some of these other things going on that we're talking about, whether it's a true freshman starting at quarterback, a guy like Stephen Carr trying to really get his feet underneath him as he's starting running back for the USC Trojans?
It's going to have to. I mean, I think that, the offensive line, although, everybody wants to talk about skill players and, the new quarterback and, the running backs and those type of situations, there is not a question in my mind that this team will be spurned by the offensive line. How they play will be mainly on the soul of how this offensive line can control the line of scrimmage, protect the quarterback, all those things. As you guys know, they dictate tempo of the game. It makes it a lot easier on the play caller when you can block guys. I mean, it's just so many things. I mean, in the Texas game, as you guys remember last year, USC was glad the game, wasn't another 5 minutes, right? So everybody was looking at the clock like, look, these guys are starting to wear us down. We got to get off the field as fast as possible. So before the tide turns, because as like especially Texas, I mean, you guys are big, physical up front. I mean, there's not a lot of questions of what you're going to get, right? It's just going to be a street fight in the trenches, and it's going to be last man standing. I think that we took as many punches as we could, and we're wobbling on the ropes at the end. But I think that that's sort of, you know, what this offensive line has to do. They have to create a feeling of dominance and control of the game, because that is the one unit that has to play well. If they don't play well, it's going to be a long season. Those guys are so key to the season, I can't even describe it.
Speaking of the Texas game, USC is going. The Horns are going to host USC in September on September 15th. It's going to be a huge game in Austin, John. It's going to be a standing room only type atmosphere. There's going to be 100,000 plus ready to see Texas possibly knock off USC. They were so, like you said, so close last year with such a young team transitioning from a brand new coaching staff. Pretty much everybody returned for the most part from the coach's standpoint. A lot of the skill guys are back. A lot of the linemen are back. What are you seeing as a prediction? And I'm even going to put you on the spot and ask for a score. What are you seeing as a prediction for Texas and USC in September? I know it's early, but just give me kind of your gut feeling. And this will be, you got a rough opening month, especially opening a conference play with Stanford. What is your prediction on what Texas and USC is going to look like in 2018?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, guys, I mean, I grew up, I mean, I'm an old school guy, and I grew up watching Texas and just, you know, whether it be Billy Sims or, you know, all the great Texas, you know, great Texas running backs and those type of days. So it's really tough. Well, first of all, if I pick against the Trojans, I'll be without a job. So I have to pick the USC.
Fair enough.
So I'll start with that. But I think that it's really going to depend on this, you know, for SC, especially going to Texas, the quarterback play, because I don't think that USC will be able to dominate the line of scrimmage against Texas. I think that, you know, Texas on the lines, we saw it last year on the offensive defensive line, so physical up front. Coach Herman, the job that he's done last year, I thought that also one of the benefits for us was we caught him early before he could really get everything, you know, sort of going. You know, when you're a new coach, it takes a while to get all your stuff implemented. So I think that from that standpoint, there'll be more experience. The guys all know what to expect. As you mentioned, there's so many guys that return. So it's definitely going to be an uphill struggle. But I also think that the one thing that SC, I think, has an advantage is their receiving core. The receiving core, last year they returned the two starting receivers from last year in Tyler Bonds and Michael Pittman, but they also had a kid named Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Ooh.
Who is really special. I mean,
yes, sir.
He's been lighting people up, you know, in high school, and he hasn't missed a beat, you know, at the college level as well. So that is the one area, and I know Texas is known for great defensive back play, but that's the one area where I think the Trojans will be able to expose them. For that reason, I think it's going to be a very close game. I'm saying 21-17, but I got to pick the Trojans to win. Otherwise, like I said, I probably won't be on the plane.
You know, that's the second time you brought St. Brown's name up without coaxing as well, so we'll make sure to keep a close eye on how he does through those first two games, including that Stanford matchup as well. And I think what you said about last year's game, about USC being fortunate to catch Texas early in the season, I feel that way about USC right now. They may very well be able to come into Austin to beat Texas, but I'm certainly glad to be playing them in week three versus sometime in November, once some of these younger guys really have had a chance to establish that experience, and this team is able to gel and really get things going in the second half of the season as well.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I mean, you know, whenever you have a returning quarterback play or lack of returning quarterback play, you know, that's usually the thing that I think, first of all, changes coaches' mentalities on how they're going to approach things. When coaches have, you know, young quarterbacks or first-year starting quarterbacks, they tend to become very conservative. Obviously, the opponent knows the same thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's going to be really how this team, you know, the makeup of this team. Teams are going to load the box on us. As you mentioned, with the returning starters, the talent at running back is very good. And so with that being said, they're not going to allow USC to run the ball up and down the field. Now, USC has to run it because that's what they do best. But teams aren't going to allow that. So because of that, there's going to be a lot of pressure in the passing game, and that's where the Trojans have to make plays. A lot of the onus is going to put on JT Daniels or whoever the starting quarterback is to make those plays. But, you know, from what I've seen early, the receiving corps from SC is really good. That's going to be something that's going to be talked about throughout the year.
All right, last thing for John Jackson, radio analyst for USC Trojans football. Going to put you on the spot here. First off, a prediction on who does start the season at quarterback for the Trojans, and also what you think the record will be at the end of the year and whether or not the Trojans make it back to the Pac-12 championship game.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, let's start with the quarterback situation. Jack Sears and Matt Stink are going to be very close. This is going to be a tough decision for Clay Helton. But I think that remember a couple years ago, he did not go with Sam Darnold out of the gate when he had sort of the same situation, you know, in front of him. I think this year he goes with the young quarterback and rolls the dice with JT Daniels.
Wow.
That's what I think going in. I think that, remember, like I said, the situation was in front of him before, and he went with the veteran guy. This year, I think he just goes with the young guy and just says, okay, let's get right to it. As far as the season goes, I think that they win the Pac-12 South. The Pac-12 South is good but not great this year. Arizona will be formidable because of Khalil Tate, who's a very talented guy. But UCLA is not the team that they should be. They will get there with Chip Kelly, but they're just not there yet. So I think that the Trojans will win the Pac-12 South. They'll play in the Pac-12 championship game. Question is, against who? Most likely it'll be Washington. It's my belief. I think Stanford is good, but I think Washington's a little bit better. That will be a very tough game. Most people will pick Washington at this point, to get through it. A lot of it, for me, will depend on the injuries as well. But the Trojans have had success against this Washington team in recent years. So I got the Trojans to win the Pac-12 championship. I don't have them making it to the Final Four, though. I think that they're going to be on the outside, outside looking in. I think it's a similar situation to last year where the Pac-12 is not going to get the amount of respect, and the conference champion will be left out of the national championship race. We'll go to a good bowl game, and hopefully I'll enjoy my Christmas, enjoy my Christmas somewhere at a very nice vacation spot. We were in Dallas, Texas last year. That was great. So I'm looking forward to coming back to Texas again this year as well.
Basically what you're saying is you don't want to end up in the Sun Bowl in El Paso or something like that, right?
That has not been a good experience for Trojans, I can just tell you that.
He is John Jackson, one of the best wide receivers in Trojan football history, and now he provides color commentary for USC football radio broadcast, and he's been nice enough to join us for a few minutes today. John, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it, man.
No problem, guys. Hopefully we'll talk to you the week of the game.
Absolutely. We'll reach back out to you then, John. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
John Jackson, man, I love his confidence with this USC football team, and he made that prediction after saying that he thinks they're going to roll with the true freshman at quarterback too.
And we talked about that in the pre-show meeting. JT Daniels was the guy, and I think we even brought it up when Joe was on the segment earlier. JT Daniels is legit, man. He is everything you want in a quarterback except for the experience, and that's really all he's lacking. And so they're going to throw him to the wolves, and I got to tell you, that's what makes Todd Orlando, he's going to be licking his chops when you can start throwing different looks and different schemes, and when you let Orlando get creative against a 17-year-old quarterback coming in. I feel better and better each time about Texas' chances with the Trojans on September 15th.
Texas fans will harken back to what Sam Darnold had to say after the win for USC last year over Texas, where his head was clearly still spinning, and he was singing the praises of Todd Orlando and all the different defensive looks that he gave to Sam Darnold, a guy who would go on to become the number 3 overall pick in the NFL draft.
And also about Sam Ellinger. That was kind of his coming out party. Shane had been hurt a couple weeks before. He'd gotten some snaps against San Jose State. Then you pretty much threw him to the wolves in a hostile environment at the Coliseum. It was, I believe, 80,000-90,000 strong, and Sam Ellinger almost willed the team. He, yep. That big time drive at the final, at the end of the game, big touchdown to Armani Foreman. I'll never forget it. And he was about a half an inch from crossing the goal line in overtime to bring in Texas a W. And so it's going to be fun. That place is going to be rocking. It's going to be the best ticket of the season here in Austin, and I'm more and more anxious each time. I'm ready for football. We're 18 days away. We need to get there quick.
No doubt about that. Thanks again to John Jackson for joining us, helping us preview the USC Trojans, the number 14 team in the Horns College Football Top 20, brought to you by Reliable Automotive. Coming up next, more Longhorn football with Justin Wells sitting across from me, filling in for Brad Kellner, who's on vacation all week. Plus, it is today's version of Tinder Time, led today by Dylan Fry, filling in for Adam Wagner. This is Midday with Trey and BK on the Horn. Back here on Midday with Trey and BK, coming up at the top of the hour, my buddy Sam Peniatovic, who is now a part of Brent Musburger's Vegas Stats and Information Network, will join the show to talk a lot of college football, including where he sees the Texas Longhorns finishing up this year. He also has some specifics line-wise on things that the Texas football team and individuals may or may not be able to get to as well. Right now, though, we have a quick piece of breaking news before we hit Tinder Time. We may soon learn the fate of DJ Durkin at Maryland. It looks like the University of Maryland has called a 1 o'clock Central Time press conference with Athletic Director Damon Evans and President Wallace Lowe to discuss some of the results of their look into allegations of a toxic culture within the football program as well. And Justin, we had Jeff Ehrman on from Maryland's 24/7 site yesterday, and he was under the belief that DJ Durkin may not coach another game at Maryland. This looks like we may have that outcome coming up here in just a couple hours.
They certainly have issues to tackle. The Washington Post put out a story this morning basically saying that if Jordan McNair, the lineman from Maryland that passed away from heat exhaustion, if he would have survived if Maryland football trainers and athletic staff had been able to lower the player's temperature sooner. This is from heat stroke experts interviewed by the Washington Post. That's probably the final straw. I think Ehrman nailed it yesterday. We've probably seen the last game of DJ Durkin's coaching career at Maryland. It's just a bad story all the way around. This is where the accountability comes into place. This is where, and it's probably not, you know, this is all speculating, but it's probably not just going to be Durkin. There may be some changes with the trainer and the strength and conditioning staff as well. So that's going to be interesting to follow at 1 o'clock because it's going to have a lot of bearing considering the University of Texas plays them week one.
At the very least, the strength and conditioning coach and the trainers who were all suspended along with DJ Durkin, they were actually suspended before DJ Durkin was placed on administrative leave. Those guys are gone, but the likelihood that Durkin has lost his job as well has really increased over the last couple of days, and we'll find out something one way or another here in about an hour and a half as the University of Maryland president and athletic director will speak with the media. All right, that's it for right now. If we find out more between now and then, of course, we'll bring that to you here on the Midday Show. Brad Kellner off this week, Justin Wells of Inside Texas filling in. Right now, it's time for Tinder Time. And Tinder Time is sponsored.
Tinder Time is brought to you by Altstadt Beer, Altstadt Brewery. German beer made here, brewed in the heart of the Texas Hill Country in Fredericksburg, Texas. Pick it up anywhere. H-E-B, Whole Foods, Specs, Total Wine, Randall's, and more. It's Altstadt Beer. No impurities. No regrets.
Thank you very much, Digital BK. Dylan, filling in for Adam Wagner. What's today's headline? First headline, that is.
Well, the first one's going to be the greatest moment in game show history.
All right, swipe right to that one.
All right, guys. So have you guys seen the $1 million pyramid or the $100,000 pyramid game that came back and made a return?
Back in the day, I saw it. Yeah, has it made a comeback now?
Okay, yes, it has. Okay. And Michael Strahan is the host.
All right.
But on the show, I believe it was last night, one of the clues was people with the last name Obama.
Okay.
And I'll let you guys be the judge of this because I've got audio of it.
Evan and Tim for $50,000. Here's your first subject. Go.
Bin Laden.
Oh, boy. Was that all that we had there? Did we not have what happened after that?
They did not show what happened after that because it was obviously timed. And he went on a 13-tweet, I guess, defense of himself.
Okay.
Last night. And he said that he did correct himself right after, but he is so afraid that this is going to change his life Because he has went viral.
Well, in this day and age, he's going to get his 15 minutes. That's for sure. Maybe beef up on current events before you go on a game show. Maybe open a book or the newspaper. That was pretty tacky.
Yeah, he was hoping that they would cut it out. But obviously they could not do that because it was timed.
Yeah, that's that is a little bit painful for him. And yeah, sucks for you, man. You got to read right the first time and you cannot make that mistake.
Yeah.
It's like accidentally dropping a racial slur or something. Like, I understand you may not have meant anything by it, but you got to be careful about the words that you say as they're coming out of your mouth. Hell, I said something about hearing the smell of something earlier. I still feel terrible about that one, much less a gaffe like that one. Good find there, Dylan. What's the next story in today's Tinder Time?
On the heels of the Carmelo signing in Houston, looks like there's more news coming out of Houston with James Harden might be getting into a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, I saw a little bit on this one. Swipe right.
All right. A woman says James Harden grabbed her wrist and threw her phone on the roof at a club in Scottsdale, Arizona because she was filming a fight.
Not just a club, right?
Not just a club.
Wasn't it a script club?
Let me see.
As they say?
It does not say it in this article, but that would not surprise me.
So
it
wait,
says
she was
at Mint Nightclub is all it says.
She was trying to film a fight for world star hip hop, and James Harden had the gall to stop her.
Yeah.
Very anti-James Harden on this one. James Harden, you let these things be filmed. They need to end up on world star hip hop. There's no reason for you to stop something like that.
The fight's under investigation by the Scottsdale police, and Harden has been named on the police report but is not a suspect yet.
And so I'm hearing this right. Harden was trying to stop the fight?
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
Wasn't trying to stop the fight. He was trying to stop the filming of the fight.
Oh, yeah, the filming. I see. Yeah, come on, James. Work on your defense. This is just another example of his poor man-to-man defense. If he can't, you know, stop someone from filming something, he has nothing to do. James Harden, the beard. Come on, man. You're not good at defense. What makes you think you were going to defend this?
Well, he did actually steal the phone, and then unfortunately he turned it over. He threw it away on top of the roof, and I am still in the anti-James Harden camp on this one. I'm sorry. You let that fight happen. I had the opportunity to almost watch a fight a couple weeks ago here in this building between a couple of women. I was starting to raise my phone up. Was hoping deep down that I might get my first post to World Star Hip Hop, and perhaps James Harden just burst that person's dream of possibly getting to film something and post it to World Star Hip Hop as well.
We're getting to a world where we used to stop fights, and now people pick up phones to watch them. And I don't know if I like that direction. I understand it, but I'm not real sure if I like that. I'm a man about peace. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Well, you clearly need to watch a little bit more World Star Hip Hop. Dylan, what's the next headline in today's Tinder Time?
All right, I got one more for you guys. Minor League Baseball is obviously nuts, and one of the craziest endings in minor league history happened last night, in my opinion, anyways.
Swipe right.
All right, so picture this. It is in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers. They are down 6-4 in the bottom of the ninth, two outs, and it is 0-2. And let's take you to the audio here of the radio call.
The 0-2 pitch is a swing and a miss, strike three. The ball pops away. They got to throw down to first, and it's going to be past the first baseman. Two runs are in the tie. Here comes Garcia with the winning run. The throw is late. The Rattlers win. The Rattlers win. The Rattlers win.
Okay, where the hell is the right fielder backing up that throw?
Exactly. That was my thought. I was a first baseman, so like that was my thought. Where's the right fielder?
Bad throws happen. You always got to back up your teammates and make sure that something like that doesn't go down. Shame on. Who was the opposition there?
That is the Burlington Bees.
The Burlington Bees, much better name, by the way, than the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers. That's entirely too much for the nickname there.
There's a reason they call it fundamentals, gentlemen. And even at the pro level, you need to have it. You need to possess it. It's the little things that win games. It was a strikeout. The guy strikes the guy out to clinch the game. The ball gets away. All hell breaks loose. And all because someone didn't take care of fundamentals for the kids that are listening.
No doubt about that. Is that it for today's Tinder Time?
That's it for Tinder Time today.
All right. Thank you. Doing a great job back there, Dylan. That includes your effort on Tinder Time today. Adam Wagner will be back in the producer's chair tomorrow. Brad Kellner will be back in the co-host chair on Monday. In the meantime, Justin Wells of Inside Texas filling in. Give him a follow on Twitter @JustinWells2424. Also, more importantly, go read his work. They're doing a great job over there at Inside Texas. That's at InsideTexas.com. And you have access to every single thing that they're doing over there right now through the second week of the season. So until USC week, you can read everything for free at InsideTexas.com. It is well worth the price of admission normally, but there is no price of admission right now. It is free, so go check that out. Coming up next, we will play one piece of audio from the coolest Little League baseball player of all time. Let's get back into the Texas Longhorn football conversation. This is Midday with Trey and BK on the Horn. Who's the new kids on the block, Justin? The other brother, Donnie Wahlberg.
Donnie.
Got some breaking news out of the world of soccer. It's not often you're going to get breaking news out of the world of soccer here on the Midday Show. You know how Brad and I feel about that excuse for a sport, but we do have some breaking news. Perhaps it's CNN-level breaking news because there's not actually anything to it just yet, but CB just tweeted an article at me that is titled, Mark Wahlberg visits his new Columbus car dealership, talks business expansion in Columbus, but the part of the article that will interest you here in Austin, especially if you're a soccer fan or somebody who has paid attention to whether or not the Columbus Crew end up making a move to Austin for the 2019 season, he's actually interested in purchasing the Columbus Crew Soccer Club to prevent it from moving to Austin, Texas. So for those of you hoping that we get soccer here, the MLS style of soccer, that is, because there is a pro team that's moving back to Austin for the 2019 season. Mark Wahlberg may be your enemy right now.
It would only be relevant if he changes the name to the Funky Bunch, because then, I mean, you could have nothing but good vibrations, and it would be so much more harmonious.
Funky Bunch would fall in line with a lot of the mascots for Major League Soccer, which aren't pluralized because their words that their plural form is the same as the singular form. So Funky Bunch does not have an S on the end, so that would qualify as a good MLS name, Justin.
That's why I'm here. That's why I get paid the big bucks to come up with something like that. No, but seriously, you know, it's funny how, you know, involved stars, people famous, people with notoriety, with tons of cash. They like to get into the ownership of professional teams. Obviously, you know, he would buy in. I'm wondering how that would affect Austin's state with an MLS team. I'm not real sure where they are with that. But Mark Wahlberg, first you got his brother who was with the new kids on the block. He was also in the movie The Sixth Sense, did some other stuff. Then they have another brother who has a reality show called Wahlburgers. So maybe Mark.
That's Dingo Wahlberger. There's Donnie, Dingo, and Mark.
It's the Wahlburger takeover, and I don't know if we're prepared for all that.
He was asked about the possibility of buying the Columbus Crew when he was in town visiting his car dealerships, and Wahlberger responded, quote, "Actually, you know what? I certainly would be interested. My dear friend Bob Kraft not only owns the New England Patriots, but he's also owned the New England Revolution. I have a bunch of people who are involved. I think that would be something we need to discuss. I became a huge, huge soccer fan. The World Cup really got me." So he's riding a World Cup not high now, and it may cost Austin a chance at an MLS team. So we'll keep an eye out on that one as well. All right, we're doing the audio of the week this week. It's also going to be the Dave South Homer call, which is usually a part of the audio of the week. But we only have one audio call, and it is the Dave South Homer call. It's sponsored by Audiovisual Consultations. AVConsultations.com is where you need to go. You hear Brad and I talking about them all the time. Give Tom McKay a call. Football season's right around the corner. They will set your home or business up to have the maximum viewership opportunities for you to watch college and pro football this next season. So now that we're done with that, let's go ahead and get the one piece of audio that we felt was worth the audio of the week bit for this week.
Hi, my name's Alfred D'Elia. At home, they call me Big Al, and I hit dingers.
That is like the coolest Little League kid on the face of the planet. Not only is he a fat kid, Justin, but he has the confidence of a kid who is much more svelte.
This kid has become my my new hero. He actually went yard yesterday, so he stands by what he says.
Hero is a strong word, but I think hero is apropos here in this instance.
You know, and it's not just what he said; it's the way he said it. He's got this quiet confidence about him. He's a big boy, and you heard it in his voice. They call me Big Al. I hit dingers. Like, to me, that's just, it's perfect. And the fact that he went yard in his first game, that just, it just justifies everything. It's such a cool story. The Little League World Series is always a cool story. The Houston area, Post Oak, actually has a team that's participating in it last year. Lufkin, Texas, from my region down in the East, Piney Woods, they were in the finals last year. And so it's always a fun time to see these kids, who their favorite player was, what their favorite snack is. But when the kid just comes up and goes, I'm Big Al, I hit dingers, you got a winner for life there, buddy.
Can we hear that one more time, Dylan?
Hi, my name's Alfred D'Elia. At home, they call me Big Al, and I hit dingers.
I'm just going to make a prediction right now, and it's not a prediction that I'm proud of, but I have a hard time seeing Big Al make it to the age of 40. So best of luck to him.
He probably wears bigger underwear than you.
Probably right about that. Best of luck to him in the Little League World Series tournament, of course, and also whatever else life holds for him, because I don't think he has long on this planet. All right, let's talk a little bit of Texas football before the top of the hour here. Sam Panayotovich from Brent Musburger's VSIN Network will join us after the top of the hour to talk Texas and a whole lot more. Also, by the way, for those of you who missed it last segment, University of Maryland is holding a press conference at 1 o'clock Central Time. That is to announce some of their findings from an investigation into the toxic nature of the Maryland football program. We expect to find out whether or not DJ Durkin will continue to coach with the Terps. You and I don't believe that's necessarily going to be the case, but that's in a little bit more than an hour. Justin, switching back to the Texas football team, considering that Maryland is the first game of the season, you would have to imagine that whatever concerns exist right now that Maryland could do to the Longhorns, what they did last year and coming to Austin, really surprising Texas, winning that game by 10 points, is greatly diminished. Even with Matt Canada, somebody who people look at as a very bright offensive mind, coming in and stepping in as the offensive coordinator in the offseason, now that he has to add interim head coach to those responsibilities as well, it just seems like there's too many moving pieces that turns the Maryland game into almost a gimme for the Longhorns.
It can actually go both ways. It can be a complete distraction. It can have kids say Texas gets up a little bit early, pretty much phoning it in. Or it could have another effect where the guys rally around it. They all pull together and they play for a jointed effort, especially they already have talked about the players have playing for Jordan McNair, and I love that, because that's what, yeah, that's part of the greatness of sports. It's the team concept. It's playing for your brother to the left and to the right, for each other, not just yourself, you know, being selfless. And so it could go either way for Maryland. I think the big thing we're going to have this year that we didn't have last year was, last year Maryland brought a defensive front that they had not used in 2 years, and I think Texas was a little surprised when they saw that, and it kind of punched them in the mouth early. I don't anticipate Texas not being prepared this go around. They know what Maryland offers at quarterback. They know what they do on defense now. Texas has been through the system. We've talked about this ad nauseum. The continuity from the offensive and defensive standpoint. Texas clearly has the more talented team. They finished the season so strong last year that there's a lot of good things that could happen. Yep. But we've already got questions a little bit at linebacker. We've already got a few questions at, you know, who's going to be the top five along the offensive line, which I don't consider that, you know, a negative per se, but it's still something that needs to be, you know, finalized. And so it could go either way for Maryland. They could rally around this guy. The memory of a fallen teammate, buying in to Matt Canada, the new offensive coordinator, or it could be a major distraction. I mean, if they lose their head coach, let's say hypothetically the head coach, the strength and conditioning coach, some of the training staff, that's a ton of turnover. And there's a reason you have each one of those people in place on the sidelines on Saturdays, because they are all needed immensely. And so it could go either way, but you have to think, you know, if Texas comes in with the right mentality, they get a good early start, you have to think Texas could this could actually give the Longhorns an advantage.
There is a texter on the Specs text line saying that the Maryland deal scares him. It could galvanize the team. Look, I understand that viewpoint, but at the same time, this is a program that is going to be all out of sorts right now. Now, according to people that we've spoken with on the Maryland side of things, there was a quiet confidence that the roster up and down was more talented than what DJ Durkin has really had to work with these last few years. But without the head guy there anymore, considering that there is the distraction that is the scandal, for me as a Texas football fan, I look at that game now as a must-win. Previously, perhaps you win, perhaps you lose, but Texas now has an opportunity they have to capitalize on. If USC ends up starting a true freshman in the first game of the season, which you would lead to believe that he is going to be starting game three of the season here in Austin as well, that is a chance for the Longhorns to start 3-0 for the first time in a long time now. The stat was thrown out last year. I forget what that number actually is, but it's been close to a decade since Texas has started a season 3-0. Now's the time to capitalize and really build that momentum up before you open conference play with TCU here in Austin, followed by that big matchup in Manhattan versus Kansas State.
I think it's definitely a must-win. There's no question it's a must-win. Last year wasn't a must-win. Last year was a, let's see what they've got. This was Herman's first game.
Last year wasn't a must-win. It was still an enormous letdown, though, and it had an effect on the vision for what the season actually turned into as well, because this is a football team that finished at 500 after the regular season, in part because they lost a game they should have won with Maryland.
But look how well they recouped.
They did rebound nicely.
Yeah, and especially, you know, like we said, they were two plays from beating USC last year. They lost three games, I believe, by combined 6 points. This was easily a 10-win season. You get a lot of those guys back. And I'm not going to question you. I'm going to tell you, the Maryland game this year is a must-win. And it's not only a must-win, it's a must-look-good doing it. Because
that's a good way to put it.
You know, not to really trash on Charlie Strong and what he did at Texas, it wasn't so much the bad records with Coach Strong as much as it was the humiliating losses. It was the blowouts. You can't have that. When Mike Perrin was on the sideline in Stillwater and saw three extra points blocked all in a row, he, in his mind, I feel like he knew right then there was going to be a change. You can't be embarrassed. And you never saw that last year with Texas team. This Texas team, if anything, got tougher. And you can, talking to other players and other coaches, that they brought a toughness that the University of Texas hadn't seen in a while. The last time they started 3-0, I'm going to guess, was 2009. And so, at this point, I do think Maryland is a must-win, not just because of the Durkin situation and what's going on, and that could be a distraction, but for the Texas psyche, to know everything they've done in this offseason as the build-up to that game. And Herman will tell you, they're not looking at USC right now. They're not looking at Kansas State to open conference. They're looking at Maryland. You got to go 1-0. It's his mantra. You go 1-0 today, when they had their practice. You want to go 1-0 tomorrow, and on September 1st, they must go 1-0.
Talk more Texas football on the other side with Sam Panayotovic of the Vegas Stats and Information Network. He'll join Midday with Trey and BK, minus Brad Kellner.